Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the...
So we got bored during quarantine and we started a podcast.
It's good to be back. It's officially 2021.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, we said it's 2021 in another podcast, but it wasn't really 2021. We were fooling people.
You mean, at the moment of recording, it was not 2021. But...
Yeah.
But it was meant for... ears that were going to be in 2021.
We had such forethought.
I know.
It was quite something.
Doesn't happen often.
Now, before we begin the... I feel like have we got anything? No. No, that's about it. So anyway, before we begin, I feel like we should discuss a few things. First off, what happened? We disappeared for 2 weeks.
We... were actually in quarantine.
we were genuinely in quarantine. We were told we had to, upon return from our holiday to family, we'll hasten to add, that we must quarantine for 10 days, and we did so accordingly. And of course, you all knew about it because it was plastered over social media. Am I right?
I highly doubt it. We basically, what?
Don't you say we. You're in charge of our social media accounts. Did you post anything about it?
About our, you know, adventures in... I don't know. No, I did not post anything. I completely forgot. And then I fought with... Well, actually, I think Facebook no longer has polls. So my whole goal of making a poll for what people want to listen to first went out the window.
Yes, awkward. So we don't have a movie review for you in this episode, as we originally promised. We didn't tell you that we disappeared for 2 weeks, and we were in quarantine. But there is good news, too. We must discuss the 16th of December. It was a big day for the Boredom in Quarantine podcast. Why was it a big day?
It was because we were going to make a poll? I have no clue. I don't remember, actually. I'll be honest.
You're hopeless.
I was seeing if I could wing it, you know, fly by the seat of my pants as I usually do. But no, apparently improvisation does have its limits.
Mm.
Why was it important?
Because on the 16th of December, we got how many listens? 57?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And I have absolutely no idea as to why.
We had somebody who decided to listen to all of the podcasts. To catch up.
Yeah, someone must have, because there's no other explanation for it.
And we are eternally grateful.
Yeah, and also, why did you put yourself through this? I don't feel this is a good...
Ignore her, thank you. I'm so glad, and I'm sure you don't regret any second of it, right?
We had a whopping 58 plays that day. Which, to give you some context, a usual day involves around about... Oh, that one has zero plays. one play, zero play... Like, there's a lot of not so many things going on.
There are days where nobody wants to listen to our beautiful, melodious voices. I don't understand why.
I do, because we don't know how tech works, and it's all over the place, and you're peeking right now on the thingamajig when we scream, but we're doing good.
I will scream the other way. Is that better?
You're still peeking.
Sorry, guys. I apologize.
But yeah, no, so the only thing I can assume is that another cockroach has clawed its way out of this post-apocalyptic pandemic world and welcomed into our utopia of podcasting.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what happened.
So, welcome.
Through the rubble.
Cockroach number four. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for listening to, for playing something 58 times. I'm hoping for you that you just kind of forgot it. You know, you just left it on play and it just kept going or something.
They just fell asleep and then, like, all the episodes had been played.
Yeah. I mean, if we have lulled you to sleep, I feel that's success.
That's good. Sleep is very important. Nowadays, we don't get enough sleep.
We don't. You know who's promoting sleep a lot at the moment?
No.
Cillian Murphy, the lead actor in Peaky Blinders.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he does have a gorgeous voice.
I was going to say he has gorgeous skin. He also looks like a baby.
He does look a bit like a baby. And he just, he's part of one of these like sleep apps. And then, he just kind of, he talks.
Oh, wait, is it one of these sleep apps where they talk to you? Oh, my God.
I know.
Yes. Please, what app is this?
I don't remember. We're not sponsored. I don't remember, but I know he's on it, and he talks. And I was listening to him. I was like, yeah, I could fall asleep to his voice, possibly, you know.
But somebody out there decided to fall asleep with our voices instead.
Yeah. So
I think we're just as soothing.
It's not the word I would have used, but I like to believe that we are at least greatly encompassing. Of you know, just we're there, like surround sound.
Yeah.
Our voices basically like God, but just two goddesses. One goddess more important than the other.
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean,
clearly it's me, the more important one, right?
So anyway, that's mostly all the news from boredom and quarantine. And you're welcome to follow us on social media and not know about what's happening to us.
Because I tend to forget to do stuff.
Yes, you do. We run a total of, what, like six accounts, six different brands of things. I run five of them. I hasten to add. Sarah runs one. Can't do it. Although, to be fair, when she gets going, like, your meme game is on point. Like,
thank you.
I like this, the recent one, and I love that pigeon one, which is the most liked post on Facebook. So if you just got your act together, we'd be flying.
It's just a sketch. I need to remember that I'm now responsible for an account. I'm so used to you carrying the load of the social media world. The entire social media world. No, I'm not kidding. Our social media brands,
like Atlas.
And I'm like, oh right, I have to do this. And it's quite fun when I have like some, I'll get like a creative idea, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll go run with this. And then it turns out it's a very large project that includes cartooning and somehow learning to do cartooning on a computer, which I've had never done.
Yeah, you're until not good I did the car- doing
cockroaches.
Like, you need lots of stuff regularly rather than one big thing once. That's the problem. Social media is about like consistency. It's how much you do, how much you post. There's such a pain. Because also, like, you have those like creative ideas, but that's like you as an artist, not you as a social media poster. Yeah, that's the thing.
I wouldn't even be giving me the title of social media poster.
No, maybe
more
not.
Like social media splatter.
In your case, yeah.
Haphazard
splatter. Just because we do a lot of other things. Like, it's not because, oh my god, maybe we should put our blinds down, up.
There's a lot of wind.
There's a lot of wind. Anyway, that'll have to wait until the end of this podcast. We don't do cutting in podcasts.
No. Because just to remind you, this is the low standard podcast. We don't edit anything besides adding music at the beginning and at the end.
Yeah.
There's no cuts, so everything you're listening to
has come out of our mouth in that sequence.
With that thought process. Or not.
Or lack of
More likely process. Lack of thought process.
Wasn't the last episode called Can Sarah Answer the Question? Which, yeah, we proved was, no, you can't. You're peaking like crazy. I don't know what the hell is going on with your microphone, why it's so sensitive, but
I don't know.
But you might be a real pain to listen to in this one. This is also, whenever I edit these things, I have to turn you down so much. And then you're such a pain to edit because you're so loud sometimes and you're so quiet other times. Why can't you just be consistently loud like me?
I just have wide range, lots of diversity.
That's, yeah, sure.
Skilled actress.
Anyway, that was the intro. We're 8 minutes in. We've only got another, 15, 20 minutes to go? So, for anyone who's joining us for the first time, if you are that fourth cockroach, although to be fair, if you've listened to as many episodes as you have by now, you know that we are two entertainers currently out of work, and we talk about all things entertainment in this podcast, because it keeps us occupied and excited. So, we use this random word generator to inspire ideas. Now, tell me you haven't put it on... What was it that you were putting it on? Where we got like banana and stupid words like that?
You mean nouns?
Nouns. We don't want nouns. Nouns are stupid.
They just describe the world. Yeah. Okay. All right. So are you ready?
I am ready.
Random. Random. Random word generator. And the word is Venus.
Venus. Well, that's a good word.
Now I want to sing that song. I'm your Venus. I'm your flytrap. That's not true. I was thinking Venus flytrap, and then it all fused together into a new song.
Right. Well, I'm glad that we got that out of the way.
Well, that's good, because now I can think about other things. Because if not, I would have had that song stuck in my head.
Forever.
For the whole episode until we would have, you know, closed the episode, and then I would have sung it, and then I would have been free.
Yeah, so it would have been like song constipation.
Yeah, more like idea constipation. Doesn't that happen to you guys sometimes, that you decide, oh, I would really like to build a shelf or draw something, and then and you keep postponing it, but it's in your head all the time, or a song, like in this case. And until you either execute it, that sounds like a guillotine execute. Maybe that's what you're doing. You either go through it, you sing it, you build it, you draw it, whatever it is, then you can't think of anything else until you do it. Do you have that problem?
So many tangents.
Sorry.
But yes, I do. No, it's like you have tangents in your, like your point is there and it runs through, it's like a backbone of the story and there's all these different bits. And I got confused. But yes, I do have that a lot. See, that's what drives me. Also, as an artist, that's what drives me. Because I usually, what happens is I have a lot of ideas and then I would just think about them a lot. And then the ones that refuse to leave, like those are the ones I feel like I have to do.
It's like the bubblegum ideas.
Yeah. I mean, there are other extremes where it's like you get an idea and it's like, I guess how quickly, how long, yeah, what is the appropriate amount of time before you go, no, that idea needs to be implemented, it needs to be done.
That's funny because I think that amount of time has gone reducing as I've learned with age and wisdom.
Oh my God. It's not my fault that you're almost your mid-30s.
please do not believe her. The silky voice you're listening to
is actually 85.
86, thank you. All right.
We got completely
I've
driving.
Even forgotten what I was going to talk about.
You said that with age and wisdom, I believe.
Oh yeah, age and wisdom.
Words.
Yes, exactly. Just like a good whiskey. I've learned that it's better to get on top of those ideas that get stuck as soon as possible. Because right. Then you do them. You have the satisfaction of doing them. You realize if it was a good idea or a bad idea. And then you're free for a new idea to come along.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there is like a period of time. Because I definitely do it quicker than I used to. But that's also because usually the ideas come in regards to what I'm doing as work. Which is not much at the moment. But like, you know, that they're related to all the things I love, which is the things I work in. And so I do tend to act quicker than I used to. But that's because I was at university and studying. So it was priority number two compared to priority number one. But then there's other, there are times where you get an idea and it's just like, that's it. You know, the book that we've just published, absolute plug, just saying. Snapshots and Anthology of True Stories, which is like a bunch of stories from our storytelling nights. That idea came at, if I remember, it was something like, I feel like it was like 9 o'clock at night, like almost like, no, it was later than that. It was like midnight or something. Something clicked and then it was just like, right, okay, we should do this. And then it was the next morning, I went into the studio and I just emailed all the storytellers. There was no, like, it was almost like, yep, that's it. Like, there was no thought process other than that. I'm like, no, I've decided that's a good idea and we're going for it. But yeah, and that's how that came to be. So yeah, you should check it out though. It's a great book. We just finished it. That was a process. If you ever want to be challenged as an artist, publish a book.
Yeah.
It is the, possibly the biggest, it's got to be the biggest project we've done.
I mean, we needed to be in a pandemic for us to do it, where we were forced to do nothing but.
Yeah, and it was like,
because all the shows were cancelled.
It was like, what, full-time job for 6 months with two people.
Yeah.
And that was us doing it quickly, huh? Because I feel like, you could take a lot longer very easily. It was all-consuming. And then editing. Who likes editing? No one likes editing.
No. I mean, you just think of all those teachers who had to edit your papers, you know, for English or whatever language.
You feel them, yeah.
You're like, oh, do I? Yeah. It's just monotonous work. And then the worst part is that after 7 months of doing this, you know, the word exit, you start wondering if it's spelled with double C instead of an X. And you're like, I know this word. It's so written true. All buildings.
You look at it like 100 times and be like, I spelled this word so many times over my life, but I do not know if this is how it's spelled and whether that's correct or not.
Yeah. Or where commas go.
But at the same time, I mean, that being said, like, it's also very rewarding as a project because you do have this little pocket, like you have an actual book that can go on a bookshelf and you know that it's on a certain number of people's bookshelves around the world, and that it can travel. That's kind of exciting. The idea.
Yeah.
I'm kind of waiting for it to show up in Emmaus at some point when someone's read it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Possibly I'll buy it back.
In case you're wondering what Emmaus is, kind of like the secondhand shop here in town.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Emma's a huge fan of going to the bookshop.
I am. Well, I'm a big buyer of their secondhand books. But yeah, I'm just kind of waiting for it to show up in Emma's at some point, which I don't know if I'll be upset or rather pleased. I'm very curious how I'll feel
about
it.
It's like we've made it into...
We've made a secondhand
mainstream. Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, so it is quite rewarding. And then you also, I mean, you have a lot of other good things with it too, of course. So, you know, you worked with the storytellers and the stories are great. I mean, like there's, obviously I'm biased because I edited it or I'm one of the editors. But then we've got so many, like such a diverse array of stories, like from the shutting down a school because they thought there was going to be an imminent attack, to going over the edge of a waterfall, to, you know, almost dying in the hands of the Portuguese men of war jellyfish. And then other things for like super simple, not simple things, but like almost kind of seemingly just ordinary things, which make great stories. You know, a trip on a bike.
I remember
conversations with your mum, those kind of things.
When we started the whole process, we started reading the stories that were submitted. One of the feelings, like for some of the stories, you have this clear feeling that, oh my gosh, I really want to make sure, I want to honor this story. I want to make sure that it's the best it can be in this book.
Yes.
And it really motivates you. And it I think it really drove us to make sure that we gave the authors the best voice they could have, even if it wasn't in their native language, you know, that we helped them to shine.
It was quite empowering because you're an enabler in many ways there, yeah, aren't you? All you're doing is trying to make them seem the best, like the best version of their story that it can be. And that was very rewarding too. And it is nice. And I hope that we'll feel the... Because it's quite funny because I feel like a lot of people are talking about it, but we have no idea. Like we're a dot in the middle of a circle. And like
also because we don't see people either.
Yeah, that's true.
During pandemics in general. we're isolated. So we don't hear what people think or what they're feeling through the process of reading it. And yeah, be great to know.
It would be nice. I mean, I know so little about it. I know so few people's opinion on it, and you know, a lot of the time you get like a message, but it's like after they've read like one or two stories, and I don't think that does justice to the book because it is such a collection of different emotions and different stories and different moments in time and different snapshots in this case. So I am kind of curious as to whether to what it's like when someone finishes the book and what they think of it, but we'll see with time. But yeah, I don't know how we got here from Venus. Do you know how we got here from Venus?
Venus. About inspiration. You know, when you get an idea in your head and how long you wait before you start taking action.
That's true. And actually, that leads on very nicely to Venus, because is she not one of the famous muses of art?
Yeah,
Aphrodite.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, isn't she?
Venus is the Roman name for Aphrodite, which is the Greek goddess of beauty and love.
Beauty, love,
all kinds of good things. I mean, how she was born, not ideal.
Oh no. Yeah. Are we really going?
I don't
there?
Want to, because we just had such a nice conversation. We'll leave that for another time. We'll leave that as a, you know, that's a,
you know, we leave you guys with some if you really don't want to do anything at work, just Google how was Venus born. Yeah. That'll give you some
how did Aphrodite,
if you're
come
a guy, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, you can find out if you read Stephen Fry's Mythos book. You'll find out in the first kind of
few
chapter or so, a few pages.
Yeah,
definitely a bit disgusting. The most beautiful woman of all time was created.
I really want to say this. She's born from Uranus. Uranus.
Okay.
Sorry, I couldn't.
Enough of your naughtiness. Isn't she one of the? Isn't there a very famous painting of her coming out of a seashell?
Yes.
What is that
Botticelli's,
one? Is it Botticelli? I thought he was a singer.
I think there's a... No, that's Bocelli.
Oh, that's Bocelli. Okay. It's very confusing.
We are so wise in art form. No, it's Botticelli, and there's quite a few, but this particular one, which I think you're thinking of, is, yeah, it's Botticelli's interpretation of Venus.
I wonder why she's such a... Why they see her as such an important muse. Maybe it's because it's the idea of...
Beauty?
Yeah, and she's meant to be kind of, I guess, the ideal woman, I guess, like Eve in that sense, like the kind of original most beautiful woman. I mean,
but the thing is that Eve, I thought, also has to do with purity and perfect, like I feel like Venus is really about the physical part. I never think of Venus as like, oh, she's perfect in her mind and soul or if gods have souls. I don't know.
No, it's definitely physical. Because also, if you listen to like some of the stories around Aphrodite, they are... She's quite terrifying.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. She's out. She's ready to attack.
Oh, really? She's vicious then. I mean, she was the lover of Mars or Ares, which is the god of war.
Yeah. And so when he also takes another lover... Cool. That doesn't go down well. And then she curses a lot of women. if you read the Mythos book is really good. Like, it's such a good... To try, I guess, and delve into mythology into, like, you know, trying to put it into 300 pages of...
Into a single, almost like a single connecting story. Yes. Like, or like a series of stories that are all connected somehow. And also think that myths do, you know, they go on tangents like I do. Yes. In the sense that, you know, depending on the culture or the town, you know, you might start getting little extra stories with this god because they're the patron god of that town, just to kind of connect them to the town a bit more. And you start having all these extra stories sprouting around. And how do you pick and choose, or how do you put it all together, streamline it into one novel?
It's hard. I really want to be able to learn... Like, to be able to remember a lot more of mythology. Like, I really like it. It's a great party trick, too, to be able to pull out a story. Like, you know, they're great stories. I think the best modern-day mythology writer, I'm sorry, Stephen Fry, I think is Neil Gaiman. I think he did... Because, from my perspective, as someone who likes to retell them...
Okay.
It's a much better book, because it is kept so simple... That they are repeatable. Stephen Fry's book is packed with so much information. And to be fair, he took on Greek mythology, which is even more, I mean, so much more intense and complicated and confusing. But he took on so much information in that one book that it is very hard to memorize the stories. And also because, I don't know, Neil Gaiman has done such a good job at keeping them simple and to the point, and but then also mythological, that kind of feeling of having it shared around a campfire.
Okay.
So I mean this is tradition now, when I go cycling I listen to audiobooks. Sorry, Dad. but I usually every summer I listen to both of those, Mythos and to
the Norse
mythology, as it's called, by Neil Gaiman, because I'm trying to memorize them, but I'm absolutely hopeless at it. Hopeless.
I think maybe what helps is like retelling them. I think as you...
Oh,
as
you definitely. Because I retold Thor's Wedding. I told it at a Myths and Legends show we did.
Yeah.
I told that one. And that one I remember much better than all the other ones.
You mean when he's cross-dressing?
Yeah, when he's cross-dressing. Oh, it's a great story.
It was a good story. Gosh.
But yeah, of course, I feel like Neil Gaiman does such a good job at... Stephen Fry is definitely is a raconteur, right? Like, and you can feel it also in his writing that he's a bit like you. There's tangents, and those tangents are great because they give you more information, but they can be not confusing for the story, but for someone who would like to retell it, it makes it a lot harder to do that. Neil Gaiman has this wonderful ability to kind of sum up characters in only a couple of words, but that to the extent
that are memorable,
that
and
are
clear.
So memorable, and that you really feel like you get the character. I can't remember what he described Loki as, but he was like, yeah, Loki is sometimes good and sometimes bad. Loki is really just very complicated. when you read the book and you can see, you watch it. You read the book and you go through it. The more stories you hear about Loki, the more you're like, yes, no, he definitely is. He's a complicated character.
Yeah.
I think he has the...
I have a question, though, because you said Stephen Fry, he's a raconteur. What do you mean by that? I would have thought it's just somebody who tells stories.
Yeah, it is. I don't know why I use that word. I mean, I use it because, like, I mean, he's so good... Like live, I haven't seen him. He has a storytelling show, and is I think doing probably great things for live storytelling. But he's great at talking. All the talk shows, he's very interesting to listen to. But I think, you know, this is a man whose brain is, I think, just so much more adept at holding onto information and weaving it into a story, And it's complex. When you listen to it, it's fantastic. But if you were to retell it, it's very hard.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, I think as a storyteller, I think he probably is a fantastic storyteller. Just that me, as an amateur storyteller wanting to retell a myth or a legend, I would find it a lot easier to go from Neil Gaiman's book than to go from Stephen Fry's.
Yeah.
I love both of those books equally. I think they're great, but I think that Neil Gaiman, and to be fair, he writes it as well. Like, you know, in his introduction, Neil Gaiman says that, you know, one of the aims of this book is that these myths are spread more often and that they are shared amongst friends, and that he wanted to write them in a way that would allow that to happen. Now, Stephen Fry also has, I think, that aim. I think he does talk about it, but he's got so much information. I mean, even things like he, and it's kind of nice, you know, he, every time he introduces a Greek god or a Greek goddess or a character of importance, he usually also tells you what derived from their name. So all the different words that derive from
the Greek word, the name, yeah.
Like Kronos, for example. And it's fantastic extra information, and it's quite fun sometimes to see where it comes from and to link it to the story. And like, oh, I can see how that became this. But it's one, it's not something you'd necessarily tell live. And two, it's just like one of those things that's an extra tangent that if you're doing live storytelling,
would just distract.
It would distract you as a storyteller from where you're going. I think it would be very hard. Unless you know that information so intrinsically, which I think Stephen Fry does.
Or I guess you'd have to see where the backbone of the story is and then get comfortable with that. Yeah. And then slowly start learning, and until that's really in your heart, then you can start weaving in all these other extra bits.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be the way.
I mean, they're two very different books in that sense, because, you know, Stephen Fry's is packed with information. It's packed with interesting stories. Neil Gaiman's is very, in many ways, it feels a lot simpler, but it, I think, also just probably equally as hard to write.
Yeah, it's surprising how sometimes simplicity, you're like, oh, this is so simple, but simplicity is hard to achieve. It's good simplicity.
Yeah.
Elegant simplicity that, you know,
yeah, he's definitely, has everything. Definitely elegant. And, you know, this is also, yeah, first off, Neil Gaiman also talks about kind of, and they both do, that, you know, these are the interpretations of the myth that they've chosen to do. There are many other interpretations of things, or versions of stories.
Yeah.
And then to weave them into a story, and Neil Gaiman's one is really like pretty much one big story told each chapter through a separate story.
Okay.
Like he's got a structure that is, you know, relatively easy to follow. But yeah, so I think for me he wins, but you'd have to read both the books. You have to let me know which one you think is the winner of
the better for the better. I guess for different purposes, the
very different maybe. Purposes. I mean, I also really enjoyed, like, we were in Greece and I read Mythos when I was there, which I had been saving for that purpose. And yeah, I mean, it is a fantastic read, as is Neil Gaiman's one. But yeah, different storytellers, different styles, different writing styles as well.
Yeah.
But we've already reached the end of our time. We've been going like the clappers here. It's 28 minutes in we are.
Whew, look at that.
So, thank you very much for listening once again. If you're that fourth cockroach. If you're the fourth cockroach who's joined the crew, thank you. We appreciate your 58 plays. we have been the...
So we got bored during quarantine and we started a podcast.
And I forgot to do the social media plug. So if you'd like to follow us on social media, where Sarah is very up to date with her posting, you can follow us on
Facebook at Boredom and Quarantine or Instagram at Boredom and Quarantine Podcast. Or you can always drop us an email at boredomandquarantinepodcast@gmail.com. Where we've had no emails yet, I'd like to point out. So
it's upsetting. We're ever hopeful. So once again, we'll close off in our usual style once again. So we've been the...
So we got bored during quarantine and we started a podcast.
Podcast. Until soon.
Bye-bye.